I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies preborn has helped save just this year. And along with saving the babies, mothers are being counseled with practical and spiritual advice to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. The goal is to save 70,000 by the end of the year, and they can't do it without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound that changes everything. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny? To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on this brand new edition of the show. Walker Wildman here. AFR is the network. AFR.net is our URL. You can go there and check out all of our work and past episodes and live shows. Just tons of great content over at AFR.net, AFR.net. You can also download the AFR app. There's many of you out there, I actually run into you guys ever so often, that don't have the AFR app, never even heard of it. Now, how you haven't heard of it, that's pretty hard to believe. But nonetheless, I'll go to events and I'll say, hey, who hasn't downloaded the AFR app? Half the hands will go up. Half of the hands that go up are AFR listeners. They listen to our FM radio stations, but they don't have the AFR app. And so you're missing out. Just to be honest, you're missing out if you don't have the AFR app, because the folks out there who do download the AFR app, they rave about it because they get 24/7, 365 American Family Radio content on their smartphone. And even if you drive or leave your listening radius from your FM signal, you can pull up the AFR app through Bluetooth in your vehicle and get podcasts, past episodes, and AFR live audio right there through your smart device. So if you're listening and you don't have the American Family Radio app, go ahead and download it, AFR.net. Go to your app store, type in AFR or American Family Radio, and click the download button. All right, let's move our attention to John chapter 5. That's where we are this week. John chapter 5, verse 24. Most assuredly, I say to you, this is Jesus speaking, most assuredly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes in him who sent me has everlasting life and shall not come into judgment, but has passed from death into life. That's John chapter 5, verse 24. As we celebrate the Christmas season, the question is, what did Jesus do? Well, that's a loaded question, and there are multiple things that Jesus fulfilled and that he accomplished during his time on this earth. But one, obviously, of the most critical things that Jesus has done is he's paid the price for our sins on the cross on Calvary. He defeated death so that those who trust in him and have salvation in him will have eternal life. That's the essence here of John chapter 5, verse 24. And we must not lose sight of that. We must not lose sight of that. We can have all kinds of debates about different theological questions and different interpretations of some passages of Scripture. But one thing that is non-negotiable is that Jesus is the Son of God. He lived a sinless life, and he died in our place so that we can have access to the Father. He took our place. He was our propitiation for our sins. And it's the final sacrifice and the ultimate sacrifice that paid our debt that can only come and only be paid through Jesus, the Son of God. So that's John chapter 5, verse 24, and a good reminder this Christmas season as to why Jesus came on this earth. All right, we are still promoting. We extended this 1 week because I know there's many of you that probably missed out on this for many reasons, but our Activate curriculum, this is an excellent curriculum, 18 sessions, 13 professors, and it's online, and we offer physical copies as well. But our AFA Activate curriculum is one of the leading biblical worldview training courses, I believe, that's out there. And it's very in-depth. It goes over American Family Association's five core values and talks about issues such as religious liberty, sanctity of life, stewardship, just to name a few. And it's very comprehensive, and it has actually action items and accountability steps for yourself and for a small group. And so if you want to get 50% off our Activate curriculum, you can do that now over at activate.afa.net, activate.afa.net. We're running both the household and individual plan 50% off and the small group and church group plan also 50% off. So you can get the individual or household package for $99, or you can get the group package or for a church or a small group for $199. And it comes with multiple copies of the workbook, DVD kit, etc., all over at activate.afa.net. So if you're looking for a Christmas gift, and I would say a late Christmas gift, but some of you wait until the week before Christmas or 2 weeks before Christmas to shop for gifts, then what better thing to give them than a very comprehensive 18-session biblical worldview training kit? This is what Activate offers. Activate.afa.net. 50% off until Friday. So we're extending this one more week. 50% off up until Friday of this week. All right, let's move in. The last few minutes we have this segment to some of the news stories I want to get to. Vice President Vance was questioned on some of the infighting, if you will, within the conservative movement, and a couple, you know, several online influencers, for lack of a better word, have been, whether it's Candace Owens coming up with all these crazy conspiracies about Charlie Kirk and how he died, or whether it's Tucker Carlson really making light of Nazism and platforming people who have very, very abhorrent views, and not just platforming and interviewing, but refusing to ask hard questions. All of this kind of infighting over the last few months in the conservative movement has been really dividing and really problematic for the conservative movement. Vice President Vance was questioned on this, and he didn't really name names, but he did talk about how we do have a common enemy, and we do need to focus on that common enemy. Let's listen to clip one.
We have to remember that we have a lot more in common than we do not in common, and that the disagreements that animate the Republican Party, while they matter and they're important, I think these debates should happen. They should happen in podcasts, and they should happen in the media. They should happen on the op-ed pages. It's totally reasonable for the people who make up this coalition to argue about what our foreign policy should be, what our specific tax policy should be, what our housing policy should be. I mean, I had a meeting just yesterday that was focused in the West Wing about how do we get housing more affordable for young Americans, because of all the things that got completely out of control under the Biden administration. You had homes that doubled or tripled in price depending on the geography in 4 years under the Biden administration. We've got to solve that problem for our young people so they can afford to buy homes, start families, and actually build their own American dream. So I think my attitude is, let these debates play out. But don't let the debates that we're having internally blind us to the fact that we are up against a radical leftist movement that murdered my friend a couple of months ago and that would throw many people in the Trump administration in prison, not for doing anything illegal, but for not following the far left's agenda. That is the real opponent here. A political movement in this country that has no animating principle, that has no agenda for the American people. Their sole obsession is to take down Donald Trump and anybody who helped Donald Trump govern. Focus on the enemy, have our debates, but focus on the enemy so that we can win victories that matter for the American people. That's my message.
Oh, there you have it. Probably something there that not many of you disagree with. He's exactly right. You know, the vice president is exactly right. He does a very good job articulating the issues of the day and speaking on behalf of the administration. And there are so many problems to be solved out there. There shouldn't be really much time for infighting within the conservative movement. There's so many common problems that we all agree on that need to be fixed. That's what we need to focus on. And these last, let's say, 12 to 14 months before, at this point, really less than 12 months before the midterms, but let's just say 12 to 14 months before January of next year, actually January of 27, which is when the new Congress will be sworn in. This is the opportunity, generational opportunity, over the next 12 to 13 months for Congress and the White House to get on their A game and get stuff done. And to me, that's the message that should be happening with urgency here, is that who knows what's going to happen during the midterms. You know, wishful thinking is that conservatives retain the House and the Senate, but who knows what's going to happen? Only time will tell. But right now, Republicans have the trifecta. They need to be doing more legislatively. I mean, there are zero excuses as to why the House and the Senate aren't pushing more through. And this is the fundamental problem with the filibuster, which is really a fake filibuster when you look at the history, because it's not a true filibuster. And those who know about this topic or have studied it or you want to look into it, read into the filibuster rule and how this came about. But this whole notion that the majority can really only get through their wish list items once a year through reconciliation, and even that tool has limitations, this is fundamentally at odds with our Constitution and our system of government. And here's what I mean by that. When our founding fathers drafted our founding documents and outlined what Congress would look like and how it would function, there were only a handful of items in which you needed more than a simple majority, specifically impeachment. Impeachment, you need two-thirds. All right, and when you look at a constitutional amendment, I think you also need two-thirds, all right, especially two-thirds of the states for sure. But nonetheless, if our founding fathers intended for the legislative branch, the House and the Senate, to need 60-plus votes on every single occasion, don't you think they would have outlined that? Don't you think they would have outlined that in the founding document? But they didn't. All right. So our founders intended for the legislative branch, in order to pass law, in order to pass legislation to be signed by the president, the founding fathers intended for a simple majority to be needed. You need 51 votes in the Senate, and you need somewhere in the ballpark of 218, roughly, votes in the House of Representatives. And this notion that you've got to have 60-plus votes to pass anything through the Senate is really extra constitutional, and it's nowhere to be found in our founding documents or any writings of our founding fathers. The impeachment tool is what needs two-thirds. Our founders specifically outlined that. But legislation, everyday legislation, including budgets, should only need 51% of the vote in the House and the Senate. And so we have this fake filibuster that jams everything up in the Senate, And, you know, the argument on the conservative side is, well, if we get rid of the filibuster, then the Democrats will pass crazy legislation. Okay. Well, I'm not going to deny that. That's probably true. If the Democrats are in charge, they probably will pass crazy legislation. But my point is, let them do it. Let the legislative branch go crazy, if you will, and let the voters respond. Let's see how the voters like that. To the contrary, let's let conservatives and Republicans pass good legislation, and then let's see how the voters respond to that. Let's let the system play out. Let's let the system work. But this boogeyman that the Democrats are going to do bad stuff if they're in charge, folks, they're already doing bad stuff. I mean, President Biden and the Democrats did some horrendous things. And so we've got to stop playing defense. We've got to start learning how to play offense. And this filibuster preventing us from doing monumental generational things legislatively is just very, very problematic. And if you take out the legislative branch and all it is who's in the White House, then we're going to do this back and forth of executive orders forever. We're always going to be going back and forth on executive orders. We need consistent, sound policy nationwide done through the legislative branch. That's how you win.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Well, as you just heard my dad mention, our 2026 tours are open and there for you to register over at wildmangroup.com. We're going to be going to Boston again. And we're going to be going to Washington, Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. So you can go to wildmangroup.com to check out those dates and all the information you need on those spiritual heritage tours. I do want to introduce our next guest. Matt Sharp is with us. Matt Sharp is Senior Counsel and Director at the Center for Public Policy over at the Alliance Defending Freedom, otherwise known as ADF. And Matt is with us now to talk about some of these cases that have been heard or will be heard at the Supreme Court. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, Matt, we appreciate the work of ADF. We've been partners with you guys for a long time, probably since the very beginning, to be technical. But Matt, tell us, it seems like every year there's major cases that the Supreme Court hears, just because they're oftentimes a final say, if you will, on a lot of legal questions and constitutional questions. But give us a kind of a brief rundown of some of the things that the Supreme Court has heard or will be hearing very soon this term.
Yeah. So kind of three big issues I wanted to focus on. The first one was a case that was argued earlier this fall in October. This was the case of Kaylee Childs. At its heart was a Colorado law that censored counselors like Kaylee Childs from being able to help kids that are dealing with questions or confusions about their gender, their identity. And under Colorado law, counselors are told you can't help a kid reconcile their feelings with their biological sex. You can't help a child find comfort and solace in who God created them to be. Well, that's a dangerous path because we know when counselors aren't able to help kids in that regard, those kids ended up getting pushed towards these dangerous puberty blockers, hormones, even sterilizing surgeries. And Kaylee is wanting to be able to help children avoid that path and rather go down a path that helps them find comfort with their biological sex. And so we challenged that law, saying that it violates Kaylee's and her client's free speech rights, their ability to have conversations, to be able to walk down this path together. Instead, Colorado is inserting itself into those private conversations between a counselor and their client, and ultimately telling Kaylee what she can and cannot say. And that's something our First Amendment does not allow. It doesn't allow the government to come in and tell people, this is what you can say, this is what you can't say, especially when we're dealing with important issues like your identity and your biological sex and these things that are really important to helping children grow and thrive. So we were excited to challenge that law. This is something that I think about 20 states have passed similar laws. So a victory for Kaylee would be a victory, not just for her, not just a victory for counselors in Colorado, but across the country. Many counselors that are feeling censored and silenced by laws like this that interfere with their ability to help kids and families.
Matt, before we move on to the other two, I gotta ask, or gotta make a point and then kind of ask a question. This is, by the way, I didn't know it was 20. That's quite astonishing that have passed this law or similar, kind of targeting faith-based counselors is the essence of it. What's so ironic, Matt, is that these laws are narrowly tailored basically to target faith-based counselors. And what I mean by that is in these statutes, very few, if any of them, probably none of them actually, say something to the extent of, if someone is embracing their natural biology and their, you know, you can't counsel them towards homosexuality or transgenderism. Like that, this is only a one-sided thing, meaning you can't counsel them towards their natural biology, how God created them. But if maybe you want to kind of push them in the direction of transgenderism and homosexuality, well, that's completely fine. It's just if you teach them to embrace how they're created biologically and through God's creation, well, you can't do that. And so these statutes are one-sided, which fundamentally is the problem with trying to regulate the speech of and the convictions in many cases of counselors. I mean, this is just an impossible thing that the government's trying to balance out and target.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So imagine as hypothetical, a child and their family walks in and says, I'm struggling with these confusions about my biological sex. I want to embrace my gender identity. I was born in the wrong body. I'm not really a male. I want to be a female. Under Colorado law, the counselor can say, yes, let's work on that. I will help affirm your gender identity and reject your biological sex. But if that same child said, I've got these confusions, I want to embrace my biological sex, I want to find comfort, Colorado law tells Kaylee and counselors like her, no, you cannot help them with that. And exactly like you said, that is viewpoint discrimination. You're saying path A is fine, path B is not. And that is something our Constitution forbids. The government can't pick and choose and say, you can go down this one path, but not the alternative view. And especially one where many of these children and individuals like Kaylee, it is exactly like you said, motivated by their faith and their belief that God created us male and female, and that our best and brightest future is one that embraces that design.
Yeah, this is it's so dangerous. And it's not just obviously the rights of Kaylee and other counselors are being infringed upon. That's a problem. But equally a problem is that young people are being victimized by this gender ideology. And what the Colorado government's here saying is, hey, we're not going to send anybody to your rescue. We're not going to let anybody come to your rescue, or at least anybody speak any semblance of sanity and reason to you. Otherwise, bad counselor, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to lose your license. You're going to be fined. From a human standpoint, it's equally egregious to allow people to remain in their confusion, and when they want help, you tell them, no, you can't get help. That's a very heartless thing to do on behalf of the Colorado government. Matt, what are a couple, you mentioned two others, what are a couple of other cases that you guys are working on there?
Yeah, so one that was just argued last week, this is the case of First Choice Women's Center. It involves a pro-life pregnancy center in New Jersey, and for quite a while has been facing very severe harassment and targeting by the New Jersey Attorney General that's been basically, you know, accusing them of giving misinformation, even went so far as to demand that this pregnancy center hand over the names, phone numbers, and addresses of its donors. We all know where that leads. When the government starts asking, tell us who your donors are, that means they're not only going to go after you, that info is going to be used to dox the people that are supporting the pro-life, pro-woman work of these pregnancy centers. So we were challenging that. We were challenging that harassment by the New Jersey Attorney General, challenging these efforts to out the donors of this incredible ministry and the work that it's doing, and ultimately protect that. Again, this is something that we're seeing many other states try and do these exact same things, these laws that target pregnancy centers to try and shut them down or silence them or censor them. We've had cases in Vermont and New York going over these exact issues. So once again, when we see cases like this, this is not just about New Jersey, not just about First Choice, but this is setting these broader principles that government, you can't harass, you can't go after and try and censor and silence pregnancy centers, and you can't require organization ministries like this to hand over all of their donor list so that you can then harass those individuals supporting the work.
You know, in many cases, we don't even know who's funding the left from a, you know, dark money perspective. The left always talks about how the right is engaged in kind of these dark money nonprofit organizations or operations. But in reality, we found this out during the 2020 election. The left moves hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars around through nonprofits. Zuckerberg did this through multiple kind of shell nonprofits to turn out the vote in 2020. And so the left does this, all the same things they accuse us of, they do. But the fact of the matter is that the government doesn't need to know, they have no right to know the individual donors of 501c3 nonprofits. And if they do desire to get that information, the only reason that they're getting it is to target and intimidate those voters and make people think twice, if you will, before they give to conservative or Christian nonprofits. We've had some crazy requests. I'm sure you guys have run into this on the ADF side as well, but we've had, right now we've got one state, I won't mention the state, but we've got one state, either the Secretary of State or no, it's the AG. The AG is wanting our specific investment portfolio breakdown. They want an entire like 70-page print-off of every single company that we own shares in through our investment portfolio, which is like, no, we're not giving you that. We'll give you page one, right, which tells you the balances, but we're not giving you all 70 pages because it's none of your business. You have no right to know what our investment portfolio is. And so, but there's other cases like that. Where these AGs or secretaries of state just want to dig and dig and dig, and it's only targeted towards conservative groups. Matt, we've got, let's see, about 5 minutes left. What's this third case you guys have been working on?
Yeah, this one I'm particularly excited about. For years now, we've seen stories of women losing out on championships, on medals, because of policies that allow guys to compete in girls' sports. A lot of this came to head with when Leah Thomas, a male, dominated women's swimming, beating out Riley Gane at the NCAA Swimming Championships. But this is one of many, many stories like this. When response, we've seen 27 states now pass laws to protect fairness in women's sports. And among the first states were Idaho, which was actually the first state to do it, and West Virginia. Well, immediately after those laws passed, the ACLU comes in and challenges them, saying they're unconstitutional. And so at Alliance Defending Freedom, we've been working with these states to help defend these laws, particularly by intervening on behalf of female athletes, saying these laws are important to me. They make a difference and protect fairness for me. Well, those cases have bubbled up to the Supreme Court. And so this coming January 13th, we're going to have oral argument on both of those laws, where we and the states of Idaho and West Virginia are asking the Supreme Court to uphold these laws and ultimately uphold the laws of 27 states that likewise protect fairness in women's sports. This is going to be huge because this is ultimately getting at the heart of this radical gender ideology that's kind of infected even the Kaylee Childs case we were talking about earlier. Can states recognize that there are differences between men and women and have those differences matter in sports and privacy and other things that ultimately really matter to women and girls? That's what these cases are advocating for, is making sure that gender ideology doesn't erase women and opportunities for women, and ultimately basic common sense that there are differences. And when we allow men into women's sports, it's women that lose and pay the price.
You know, it's crazy to think that the Supreme Court is having to decide and really weigh in on topics like this. I mean, in some cases, it's just not good. But I think the Supreme Court, it'll be a missed opportunity if they just don't settle this whole insanity of trying to act like we can change birth certificates and we can check the mailbox when we're not a male, we're just not, and really get rid of this notion that you can kind of have Male and female over here, like on the reality side, which is biology, and then over here you can kind of fudge it a little bit, check a few different boxes, and pretend to be something else. It's just the Supreme Court ultimately needs to put this to rest and just simply say that there are male and female. There is male and female. There's nothing else, and you can't swap back and forth between the two. You just are what you are. This is how you're created from conception, and there's no swapping back and forth or pretending. I think that would be the ultimate victory. Matt, I really would hate to see the Supreme Court try to like split this up and not directly answer the question or create like some accommodations. To me, if this doesn't get really, you know, pushed back far and really corrected, then, you know, trying to defend the rights of women and the left will just keep chipping away at the rights. To me, it just seems like a very dangerous path that the Supreme Court doesn't come down pretty serious and hard on this.
Yeah, that's why we're hoping the Supreme Court will come down very strongly to say it is perfectly fine and constitutional to recognize men and women are different, and it impacts so many different areas of life, sports, privacy, identification documents. And that's part of what the states are asking for, is let us recognize these differences, and ultimately even pointing to federal law. Again, Title IX was written to create equal opportunities for women, but the left and the Biden administration and others co-opted it and tried to use it to push this radical gender ideology. So we're hopeful the court will roll all of that back and say, no, Title IX and laws like it recognize that there are two and only two sexes, and that when you allow men and women sports, you are undermining the purpose of these laws, ignoring reality, and ultimately harming women and girls.
Yeah, absolutely. They need to really get this right and really recognize what humanity has recognized since the book of Genesis. Hey, Matt, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate y'all's work over at ADF. Tell our folks where they can read more about your work.
Sure. They can visit us online at adflegal.org. That's adflegal.org. They can learn about the cases I've just talked about, Child's First Choice and the women's sports cases and a lot of other ones that we're working on to defend free speech, religious liberty, life, marriage and family, and to combat the harms of gender ideology. And so obviously we'd covet your listeners' prayers as these cases are being argued and discussed and considered by the Supreme Court. Ultimately, we hope common sense and truth prevails in all of these cases.
Amen to that. Matt, appreciate your work, brother.
Thank you.
All right. That's Matt Sharp, who is Senior Counsel and Director at the Center for Public Policy over at ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. ADFLegal.org is that URL. adflegal.org. We appreciate him coming on. And also, we appreciate ADF's continued legal defense of our rights as Christians and people of faith around this country. Between ADF and others, they've done a lot of good, gotten a lot of victories at the Supreme Court and other courts as well. All right, folks, we got one segment left. We're going to have on Mississippi Agricultural Commissioner Andy Gibson. He'll be with us in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. Hello, this is Walker Wildman, CEO of AFA Action. I'm convinced this coming year will determine whether the movement back towards Christian values in our government will be sustained, or will it fade? Which will it be? Who will prevail in the 2026 elections? Who will win the court battles? Who will advance godly values? You and other AFA Action supporters must play a part. This is why AFA Action has a supporter that has offered $200,000 to double the year-end gifts from faithful Christians like you. We need to impact Congress and state governments all around the country. We need to impact the courts. And lastly, we need to impact the 2026 midterm elections. As you've seen, the other side is playing for keeps. The woke radicals will spend and they will do virtually anything to destroy our Christian heritage and foundation, and they will succeed unless we stop them. To help double the impact of our challenge, go to afaaction.net, afaaction.net.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the last segment of today's program. Walker Wildman here with you at the Core on American Family Radio. You can listen live over at AFR.net and on the app, the American Family Radio app. All right, I want to introduce our next guest, who's been a guest multiple times on the program before. That's Mississippi Agricultural Commissioner Andy Gibson. Andy Gibson is on with us now. Commissioner Gibson, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Walker. It's always great to be with you. Always great to be back. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Glad to have you on. There's multiple things I want to talk about. The main thing that we brought you on for was to shed some light on the EU. They've been working on, of course, a lot of left-wing ideas come out of Europe and specifically the European Union. But they've been working on a deforestation plan. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is something that the EU, which, as you know, is a group of countries that decided to form their conglomerate, basically, for the entire continent of Europe without, with the exception of Great Britain, which is now out since Brexit. But the EU adopted a rule basically that says they weren't going to buy any wood or any other products from areas that were being deforested around the world. And guess what? They defined deforestation. And so it might not surprise you that includes cutting any tree in the state of Mississippi, which is absolutely ridiculous. We do not have a deforestation problem in the state of Mississippi or in any other part of this country, for that matter. In America, we plant back about 4 trees for every tree that we cut. So we've been pushing back on this for 2 or 3 years, but it's already hurt our tree farmers. It's hurt our timber industry. Forestry is the second largest product in the state of Mississippi, and it's already depressed prices because what's happened is a lot of these big timber buying companies have just started putting this in the contract that we're not buying deforested wood in Mississippi or in other parts of the country. This past week, it's gotten to the point that it looks like they're trying to delay this perhaps, but delaying it, which it's been delayed a year or two already, delaying it, in my view, is not sufficient. What they need to do is to have this not apply. The effect of it is it's taken away our landowner rights in Mississippi. It's taken away our markets in Mississippi and in America. So myself, our Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, and our congressional delegation penned letters to the administration, to President Trump last week, asking them to basically put the entire European trade deal on halt until this rule is removed. We can't allow this kind of foreign influence to come in here, creep in here, and take away our rights as Americans. And frankly, this is just one example of many that I'm aware of where we see foreign influence creeping into America. We can never let that happen. We are a special country with freedoms that no other country has. And anytime that they come in here and try to take away a little bit of our freedom this time, they'll be after more next time. We got to push back and we have to beat this.
Yeah, this is just baseless. I mean, the deforestation, which kind of sounds like a boogeyman for, but to put things more practical, harvesting timber and then not planting any is generally and broadly not even a problem. I mean, the vast you can explain this better than me, but the vast majority of especially tree farmers who are in this for a living, they would have no livelihood in the future if they don't replant trees. I mean, this is what they do. They harvest trees, then they replant trees, and 20, 30 years later, they harvest trees again, and then they replant. So their livelihood depends on planting more trees. But Commissioner Gibson, this just isn't a problem.
It's not a problem, and it's just a way that they're encroaching on our freedoms. This European rule, in exchange for agreeing to it, the landowner would basically say, I'm never going to do anything else with my land ever again. So that's giving more control of our property, our freedoms, to some other country. And it's ridiculous, and it needs to be either taken out altogether and not apply in America or reinterpreted in such a way that it does not apply in the state of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I just think it needs to be banned altogether as part of the trade deal. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and President Trump, you know, if this gets on his radar, which I'm sure it will, especially if the state senators here or the U.S. senators from Mississippi, you know, got involved here. This should be part of the negotiations with the EU and those countries there. Commissioner Gibson, I want to get your thoughts on President Trump just announced this morning that the White House and Congress is working on roughly a $12 billion farm bill, for lack of a better word. There's just not a name for the bill yet. But farmers have been in a tough spot, and this isn't just a recent development. This has really been kind of looming since COVID. The supply chain, everything got out of whack. Input costs skyrocketed, yet commodity prices today are very low, relatively speaking. So from a farmer's perspective, give us kind of what they've been going through, the difficulty they've been going through.
Well, our row crop producers, which includes soybeans, cotton, corn, sorghum, other row crops like this, have really been in a nationwide farm crisis for a number of years now. Only recently has it precipitated to the point that this kind of relief would be necessary. The reason for that is, again, foreign influence. We have to push back against it. We've become so dependent on China to buy our soybeans, for example. They were buying 75% of our soybeans. And then one day they decided they'd go cut down the forest in Brazil and grow their own. And so leaving our farmers with no markets, President Trump has been working to renegotiate those kind of trade deals and resetting trade relations. But frankly, we've been in an agriculture trade deficit for the last 4 or 5 years under President Biden, meaning that America has been buying more ag products than we've been selling. And that is the reason why our markets are out of whack the way they are. An oversupply of product, lower demand globally. And so President Trump is resetting global trade relations. This program he's announcing today, as I understand it, is about $12 billion that is going to go to help farmers bridge the gap from where we are today to next growing season, with the idea that there'll be a long-term, better trade deal for them. And he's already got a lot of trade wins already. We talked about the work he's trying to do to get a better deal in Europe. He's announced a better deal with China, but there's other countries around the world like India where we can get better deals for our farmers and reset the trade relations globally. But this is one more example of foreigners coming in here trying to influence our country and, frankly, trying to put our farmers out of business. We can never let that happen. Food security is national security.
Yeah, what China did, just to put it bluntly, was very dirty. They agreed to the trade deal with President Trump in the first term, and I think that was around 19. And then they completely reneged on it when Biden got in, which is not surprising. They completely reneged on it, didn't follow through with hardly any of it, left our soybean farmers out to dry, and moved on to Brazil. And they're trying to basically make Brazil their hub for agriculture, for imports for China, which should be a little concerning for us that they're wanting to move off of our soybeans and onto Brazil's, which is essentially theirs because China's pumping in a lot of the money into Brazil to build the infrastructure. Commissioner Gibson, what do we do moving forward to where we're not in this position? Now, we're always going to need China, and then China's always going to need us to a degree. At least that's how it's structured today. But how do we get to a place where we're not so dependent on China buying our agricultural products? Is there other markets out there that we could partner with?
You know what? India is another market to potentially partner with. But I think fundamentally we have to bring back to America, to American soil, our own domestic processing. Right now we're growing cotton. We're shipping it around the world. Somebody in Asia turns it into a T-shirt and we're buying it back. We need to bring all that back to America, bring back domestic production, value add, help our farmers make a better profit by processing everything we grow here, from soybeans to cotton, corn, to sweet potatoes, for that matter. And when you do that, the value stays here in America. And we're going to have to do that, I believe, if we're going to rescue American agriculture from the whims of foreign actors out there, bad actors. We have to put, like the president said, put America first, and Mississippi, put Mississippi first, and grow our own products. We are ridiculously importing soybean oil from other countries when we could be having it produced right here and crushing it right here on our own shores. And that's the type of common sense reform we're going to have to do. Feed ourselves first If a nation cannot feed itself, it is vulnerable, it is weak, and we can never allow that to happen. Feed ourselves first, and then whatever excess product we have going around the world. That's what I believe, and I believe the president believes that as well.
Yeah, there are certain national security considerations and sectors that are already very regulated and aren't allowed to have foreign ownership. I mean, can you imagine Lockheed Martin being owned by China? But our agriculture, in many ways, is a national security market. It's a national security sector of the economy. And China's been buying up this land, this agricultural land, buying these family-owned farms, turning into some major conglomerates, and then either shutting them down or targeting them and buying them, buying the produce, if you will, or the harvest directly back to China. And so foreign ownership in American land and agricultural land is very problematic for many reasons. What can be done about this, or what has been done about this?
Well, there currently is a reporting system. It is a voluntary reporting system that is through the United States Department of Agriculture, where land that is held by foreign interests, including China, is reported voluntarily. The problem is nobody really knows how much they own or control, because so many of them will form a local LLC or a corporation, and kind of it's a shell game. They're hiding their ownership. But what we see happening is, as farmers are feeling this pressure globally, a lot of them are just saying, we're going to sell, you know, we can't keep this farm going. And then foreign buyers are coming in, writing them 2-3 times what it, the market value is to own up our land. A lot of the solar farms that we see, so-called solar farms, you can't eat solar, but a lot of the solar farms that we see going out there are Chinese owned. And recently the Trump administration found out they had spyware built into the solar panel. So it is a food security issue. It is also a national security issue, and we have to stop it. A lot of the states have passed laws to ban it or to limit it. But President Trump and USDA Secretary Rollins have told us they're going to really tighten this up at a federal level. And really, I think that's what it's going to take to shut this down, because you have a patchwork of states that have good laws. Our law is pretty weak in Mississippi. It could be a whole lot better, but it's going to take leadership like President Trump's to say no more foreign countries buying up our land and basically controlling our freedom to exist. If you can't feed yourself, you might as well not be a country. I've traveled the world promoting our products to other nations that cannot produce their own food. And I'm telling you, it's a very vulnerable situation. We will never let that happen in our great country.
Amen. You know, speaking of the solar panels, I think looking back when the history books are written on this, I think leaning into solar is going to be the one of the gravest mistakes that our energy sector did, because it just doesn't make sense economically or from an energy production standpoint. There are way too many limitations. And with us leaning into small modular nuclear reactors, which is what the Trump administration is doing, and deploying those over the next 2 to 4 years, it's going to just make solar look laughable. The fact that we ever spent any money investing in that, I think when the history books are written, is going to be quite comical. Commissioner Gibson, we appreciate your work in Mississippi and across the country and working with our congressional delegation on these topics. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. God bless you and AFA.
All right. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Absolutely. That's Commissioner Andy Gibson, Agricultural Commissioner out of Mississippi, talking about multiple topics, one of them being the Farm Aid Bill that President Trump announced this morning, some $12 billion. And folks, I know multiple farmers that I talk to on a regular basis, and the last few years have been just very, very tough, very hard. And primarily, you look at the input cost post-COVID, the input cost to put the crop in the ground, to plant it, to water it, to fertilize it, just to maintain it. The cost just skyrocketed to input, and the output just didn't keep up. It just didn't keep up. And here we are now, and commodity prices on, you know, these harvested crops are dropping. They're just dropping, which is in some ways good because the end consumer is getting a lower price, which means inflation is easing on these agricultural products. But if you're the farmer who invested all this money into the crop and you just can't get your money back, much less make any money, that's unsustainable. And so that's where this farm aid bill is coming from. And, you know, out of all the money spent in Washington, D.C., I have zero problems helping our farmers. This is a national security sector of the economy. If we can't eat, we can't live. This is the backbone of America. Our agricultural sector is the backbone of America. And we've got to take care of our farmers. And so $12 billion is just pennies when you look at the federal budget. And we can probably cut $12 billion from somewhere else to pay for this, if we're being honest. All right, folks, Walker Wildman at the Core here on American Family Radio. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.